Technorama episode 354 for September 19th, 2012. Arr!
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Ahoy, mateys. Where be the best place to store me treasure for the odd and bizarre?
Over there, in the media corner.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Welcome to Technorama for September 19, 2012. This is a show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time listening to Technorama, thank you for joining us. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. Please pay your toll and get out. We appreciate you giving us your time. Just kidding. I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm feeling a little scurvy coming on.
In case you can't guess, guess what September 19th is?
Talk like NASA Astronaut Day?
I was thinking we should do more like Talk Like Jack Sparrow Day. Me, I'm dishonest. A dishonest man, you can always trust to be dishonest honestly. It's the honest ones you want to watch out for because you never can predict when they're going to do something incredibly stupid.
You actually sound like one of the members of Monty Python.
Well, I'll remember that if we ever need to do any Monty Python stuff.
Yeah, bring that one back.
Coming up in this episode, we have Zwep, Flarg, and Nip. Don't look at me like that. Don't you speak Zern?
See?
None of that and more coming up right after this.
Wee-wee.
I used to have people call all the time. 9 times out of 10, you're never going to get that.
Close enough for government work called none other than Technorama.
Enjoying Technorama.
He's also installed a robot. This thing's made out of a big whiskey bottle.
Working.
Okay, that's kind of weird. Thank you, everybody.
Yes. You know what I thought about?
Pre-release.
Pretty wild.
It is pretty wild.
Hey, welcome back. Every week we do this show live on Google Plus Hangouts, and we want to see you there. If you happen to be around at 9:30 Eastern Time, we'd love to see you. We have a number of people in the chat room right now. We have Claudio M., Captain Rootbeer. You know, we should really have a piratey theme going, but we didn't have a chance to change it yet.
No, I don't think we informed the chat room.
We have me and okay. You and Gru and IE Daddy. And KnightD427, Mad Marf, Pixel, Step K, well, we said you already, Tim Elliott, and ZML2008. That is awesome because, you know, we got a couple new names in there, and I always like to see the new names in the chat room. Welcome new listeners and new viewers, or whatever you're doing. We usually
or
tweet this message
out. Or whatever you are.
Whenever you are, whoever you are. Wherever you are. What is that? The what, where, when, who, why, how? Kind of thing.
Yeah, the 5 points, whatever they call them.
Show up in the chat room, we'll give you a shout out too, whether you come up with a piratey theme or not. We also want to look at the birthday calendar. We have a Technorama birthday calendar, in case you didn't know. We do this every week, so the only way you wouldn't know is if you're a brand GNU listener.
GNU.
This is the first
you're open source. Sorry.
Just stick with me here. September 21st is Dean Jensen, a.k.a. Beaker One. September 22nd, Matthew Jarks. I'm hoping you put that pronunciation in parentheses just for me. And also, Bilbo and Frodo Baggins share the same birthday on September 22nd.
That's right.
Isn't Bilbo like 111 years old?
I think he's more now. In the story, he was, but...
If it happens to be your birthday and you're not on the birthday calendar, no matter how old you are in Middle Earth years, from the age of third age of millennia, whatever it was, We wish you a happy birthday. And if you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, head over to chuckchat.com/wiki. It's right there on the birthday calendar. Add your name and we'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. And don't forget, Sunday night, Google Plus Hangout. We want to see you there. Even though this podcast comes out on Wednesday and you may be listening to it weeks and weeks from now, think about Sunday night. You know, they always put the Grammys or something on there. Posh on those. Come on. This is more fun than that.
We're bigger than that.
Even, you know, Sunday night football, you can DVR and get through in a third of the time. This is well worth it. Because you get to see all the mess ups and nonsense that goes on that Craig edits out for the audio show.
Hey, Chuck, I can see it now. We'll tell everybody that. They'll DVR the games, and at the end of our podcast, we'll spoil it with the scores.
Oh, the Saints lost. Wash dies.
Yeah. Oh, that never.
Speaking of Wash, before we get into that, did you see that scientists discovered a new monkey this week?
Yes, I did.
And it looks like Alan Tudyk. It looks like I said they got to call this thing the Wash
monkey.
He does. He's got that same expression on his face. It's great.
Well, yeah, I kept looking at the monkey because it has this kind of solemn looking look on his face, like. Like, he doesn't care about anything.
He's just having his own good time.
I guess so.
All right, let's move on. On this day in history for September 19th, 2012. It was on this date in 1846 that two French shepherd children, Melanie Calvet and Maximin Gerard, experience a Marian apparition on a mountaintop near La Salle, France, now known as Our Lady of La Salle.
Also today in 1934, Bruno Hauptmann is arrested for the kidnap and murder of Charles Lindbergh Jr.
On September 19, 1946, the first Cannes Film Festival is held, having been delayed 7 years due to World War II.
Yeah, and 60 years ago today, the United States bars Charlie Chaplin from re-entering the country after a trip to England.
Because he looked like Hitler. First American underground nuclear bomb test, which is part of Operation Plumb Bob, was today in 1957.
And it was this date in 1959 that
Nikita Khrushchev. History's not your thing, is it?
I was too busy trying to read it. Nikita Khrushchev is barred from visiting Disneyland due to security reasons for the same reason that Charlie Chaplin wasn't allowed here.
Betty and Barney Hill claim that they saw a mysterious craft in the sky and that it tried to abduct them 51 years ago.
I thought you were going to say rubble. Continuing the unusual events today in 1976, two Imperial Iranian Air Force F-4 Phantom II jets fly out to investigate an unidentified flying object. When both independently lose instrumentation and communications as they approach, only to have them restored upon withdrawal. I want to believe.
Scott Fulman posts the first documented emoticons, you know, the smiley face sideways things and sideways sad face, on Carnegie Mellon University's bulletin board system. That was today, 30 years ago.
Wow. And today in 1991, Otzi the Iceman is discovered by a German tourist.
Sounds like a game. You want to play Otzi the Iceman? Happy birthday goes out on this day to Christopher Stone, the first disc jockey in the United Kingdom, born today in 1882.
And also born on this date in 1888, American mathematician J.W. Alexander.
Australian automobile Ferry Porsche. He wasn't an Australian automobile. He was a pioneer. Was born today in 1909.
And the original Batman, Adam West, and I maintain the only, celebrates his 84th birthday today.
American journalist Soledad O'Brien turns 46.
And tech blogger Gina Trapani is 37 years young today.
And a correction to last week, it wasn't Aaron Gray who turned 72. I had a mistake. It was Linda Gray. Sorry about that. Last but not least, today is International Talk Like a Pirate Day. There's even a song about it. And that's the way it was on this day in history for September 19, 2012.
Bring on your history.
Good news, everyone.
Hey, by the way, I was actually catching up with this season's Futurama, and I had to laugh because remember that the one episode where the Earth was going to crap because of the Martian calendar.
Yes.
And the world lost all its power, even Bender, and he had the wind up thing on the side. Remember that?
Yes.
Hey, guy. See, my, nice. My bender's got a key on him.
He's ready for the mind calendar. He's ready for the end of time.
That actually came out way before.
That's funny.
You know.
Hey, are you annoyed by your software? You know, you're in tune with your news feeds and your email, and everything starts going bing, bong, and it's really distracting when you're busy.
Yes, we've talked about our notifications before.
Yeah, I generally shut them off.
Yeah, right.
I get a lot more work done. I even turned off auto syncing to like Dropbox and Box.net. I sync on demand because
really?
It will just eat up the CPU at the worst possible times. You're giving a demo or something. So now it's like, hey, you know what? I updated something, push it to the server. Or I know my colleagues have something, pull it down from the server.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did turn off my notifications where it says, you know, so-and-so is updated. I didn't need to see that all the time, but I leave it on. But that's a good point, I guess.
Well, apparently now there's software that will sense when you're busy. We know better than most when you're working to a deadline. Constant pop-up notifications and pings can be a real pain. Our frustrations might soon become a thing of the past, however, with some help from boffins at the Graduate University for Advanced Studies in Japan. They are working on technology which monitors keyboard pressure and silences those distractions until it deems you are not busy, showing over 80% accuracy during volunteering testing. Understanding that quiet time is also appreciated for other tasks, they plan to use similar techniques to spot when you're staring intently at that report, or more importantly, attending to a beverage. I thought they were going to say cat videos, but... It's still in the early days of the project, but if your stress-saving tech ever spawns a product, we'll take two, please. One for Craig and one for me.
Yeah. You know, I have a feeling that if I didn't get any notifications when I was busy, I don't think I'd ever get any notifications.
I don't want the notifications. There are times when I just shut down mail entirely for hours on end because I know I got to get something written or, you know, focus on software or something. That really demands 100% cognitive skills, and just those things are distracting.
Why, you know, I've thought about this. You know, I like, and you're probably seeing this some on iOS now, of course, because you got the pull down notification bar.
Yep,
I do too, of course, on my Android phone, but which is great because I can see the icons across. I don't have to actually look at all the notifications unless I'm, you know, I'm ready to. Well, why don't they do those on a computer? Just kind of queue them up somewhere.
Yeah,
so I can pull them,
a notification center kind of thing. Yeah.
Why don't they do that on a computer? I don't need to see pop-ups. You know, Windows is the worst.
Yes.
You know, I hate that. You know, you're sitting up here and, you know, you got updates or, you know, I got to click through three different...
Or on a Mac, all the growl notifications.
Yeah.
So-and-so has updated this file. I don't care!
Yeah. Well, you know, again, I wish that there was a notification bar on my box where I could say, don't show me anything. Just stick them there. I'll look at them when I got time, you know, or later.
The little widgets like on the iPhone or whatever that tell you have 3 mail or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, you remember Kane's Arcade?
Yes, I do.
The little boy who came up with the cardboard arcade and went viral. Well... Mm-hmm. There's been a follow-on. It's been almost a year since he did this. And the gentleman who helped make the video about Kane's Arcade has reached out and said, hey, we want to start this scholarship project. And he got like $100,000 in the first week. Just tons of money. Yeah. Yeah. So what they started, I'm trying to remember what the name of it is. It's like the innovation creation or some clever name like that. To help other kids get started with this. And they said on October 6th, they've got this thing called the Global Cardboard Challenge. And you can go to cardboardchallenge.com. I thought this would be really fun for Susie's How to Grow Your Geek podcast.
Yeah.
Because kids
should send feedback.
Kids are very innovative. They have they don't surround themselves with the preconceived notions that we do of what worked and what hasn't. They'll just, you know, try anything once. And that's really where
Wait a minute,
you get.
I still do that.
No, you know better in some cases when to look before you leap.
Yeah, that's my career, man. No, I'm just kidding.
But they're saying go and make yourselves a cardboard game or a robot or vehicle or whatever, you know, to get this inspiration going. They want to get this into the teaching methodology of schools, not just, you know, the old book and trial and lab experiments, but real life scenarios, kind of like the FIRST Robotics or the Lego Mindstorm thing, where you're actually putting it to practical use. And I think that's awesome that they've created this foundation that will help gear this. They've already got schools all over the world that are part of this foundation that they're helping to fund. And I just think all of this because one guy went to buy a car door handle and ran into a kid who wanted to do something with a basketball hoop that he won. And it's just really inspiring and really heartwarming to see such a great thing come out of such a simple concept.
So did they use some of that money that he made to do this?
Yes.
Oh, well, that's very cool.
Let me see if I can find the name of that the foundation real quick.
I did see that there was a second documentary on it, which I haven't watched, you know, the second one.
It's called the Imagination Foundation. So 19 days left to build. October 6th is play day. The Imagination Foundation is launching the first ever global cardboard challenge. And there's a Google map with things in Australia.
What's the age difference or limit?
I didn't see one. So apparently kids are kids. Harrison can get into this. Oh. Not you. Harrison.
Sorry, I hit my headphones. 43. That's the limit.
September will be the month to organize and build. And on October 6th, the one-year anniversary of the flash mob that came out to make Kane's Day, friends, family, coworkers, and community members can come out to play at local events. So they want you to set up this local event, like your school or an organization, or, you know, just get family people around and get it going.
Get That's kids really
to,
cool.
to do imaginative things with cardboard, or they had popsicle sticks, and just it really is interesting if you watch the video to see what has come of this one thing 1 year ago. And it,
by the
it
way,
really
I like
inspiring.
At the top it says beta.
Beta.
On the website. Imagination beta global wasn't cardboard challenge.
Gmail beta for the first 8 years of its life?
Yeah. No, that's cool. I think this is awesome. I've seen things like that, trying to get kids to do programming and get into electronics and stuff like that too. I think anything to get kids motivated to use their imaginations to do something, I think is fantastic.
Absolutely, because we certainly know how well the school systems are doing.
Yeah, and I want to encourage my son to have a good imagination and do well, because he's going to have to take care of me someday.
Someone's got a good imagination, because if they didn't, we wouldn't have Hacks and Strange Stories. In the Hacks and Strange Stories, we have... This stuff is made for Technorama. GPS shoes, that's right. The concept of GPS shoes is nothing new, the first time I've heard of it. But this pair designed by Dominic Wilcox, don't report your whereabouts to mom or an authoritarian government or something. Instead,
I'm the one that has trouble with words here, Chuck.
And you're drinking.
Still my material.
Instead, they'll help you shuffle home if you get lost somehow. Commissioned by the Global Footprint Project of Northamptonshire, these functional prototypes have a GPS device implanted in the heel with an antenna pointing out the back. What's his name? Not Professor Gadget. What was Don Adams' character name on TV?
Maxwell Smart.
Thank you. See, I remember the actor. That's plus one for me.
All right, so let me make sure I got this right. So I know you just read this, but I wasn't paying attention to you.
Love you too, man.
In the heel antenna point, you can track your shoes?
Two sets of directional LEDs in the toes. The circular LED display points... that's redundant, LED display. This points in the appropriate direction, and the straight one indicates distance.
Hey, I wonder if these will be compatible with Find My Phone.
What if you put your shoes on the wrong feet because you're too dang drunk?
See, I think Apple should go into this and do, like, Find My Feet.
Oh, my goodness. GPS shoes. Wait, it gets better.
Okay.
You've heard that phrase, pie in the sky, right?
Yep.
Some pie in the sky idea, like GPS shoes.
Yeah, those were a great idea one time.
Well, over the skies of San Francisco, a group of pilots typed the first 1,000 digits of pi earlier last week.
How did they do that?
They had five planes flying in a row, and they printed it out kind of like a fax machine.
Oh,
where they would go dot, 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 dash, and the other one would go blank, 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 dash.
You mean like dot matrix?
Yeah. Look at the pictures on the link. And they did 1,000 of them. Of course, you know, about 8 or 10 digits in, the other ones start to blur. But it's actually kind of cool.
Well, after a while, when just looking up there, I mean, if you were unaware and just look in the sky.
And you saw these numbers. Be like,
what are they doing? I mean.
Is it the national debt? Is it today's winning lotto numbers?
The national debt. It's they got to keep flying back and forth to update the numbers.
You can just see the guy going, God, give me a sign. He looks
so
up
each plane had a number on, would have the whole number, right?
No, 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 no.
Just the
one
line.
One is printing. It's like the lines. Think of a dot matrix printer, right? One plane is one pin.
Well, that's what I was getting
at. So, yeah, five pin printer.
So if you were unaware, you just think these planes had dots on them.
I saw from the video, I couldn't even see the planes. So it just looks like these numbers sort of appear out of nowhere. It's like, oh, it's a 3.
You'd have to have your planes, your camera just sitting there open and exposed to capture this.
Well, a guy had a video camera. Wait,
talk about, talk about obscure. I mean, you usually do some kind of stunt like this so people go, oh, look. But this, I'd be like, what are they doing?
I'm just thrilled. You know, I'm amazed at the precision at which these numbers came out.
That's true.
There had to be some kind of programmable logic controller in the plane or something to get these all synchronized to fire the smoke at the right time so it actually made a legible digit.
Wait.
What?
Smoke was involved. Oh, okay.
What did you think?
Lights. I thought it was lit up.
Are you not looking at the picture?
I am now.
Okay.
But it looks like light. Never mind.
Haven't you ever seen skywriting?
Marry me. I've seen it.
That kind of thing?
Yes.
Not hauling a banner around.
Oh. See, I thought you were saying that. Okay, maybe I'm just I always thought you were saying that each, you know, the plane had a row of lights.
You're being blasted in the chat room, i.e. Daddy says, skywriting, Google it.
I know what skywriting is. Dang it.
Someone didn't prepare for the show.
No, I absolutely did not read any of these. Okay. But yeah, that's okay. Now it's cool. Okay.
And if you really want to get into cool, somebody has case modded a PC around an old Atari 2600 console.
I do know what Atari 2600 is.
Awesome. We're farther along than the last story. Atari games
somewhere.
Redesigned in HTML5 may bring back a flood of nostalgia, but they leave out the key part of the gaming experience, the classic hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Hard drives Northwest filled that void by gutting a limited number of authentic 2600s and stuffing them with modern PC components, packing a Core i7 3.4 gigahertz processor.
Wait a minute, been done before.
The retro console now boasts 22,857 times more processing power.
Whoa. 22,000. Whoa.
So how much faster is this than when I was a kid? 22,857 times faster.
Hey, this has been done before. The Commodore did it.
Commodore did it, but this isn't a computer that they retrofitted. This is a gaming console.
No. I would argue that it is a computer.
The 2600?
Your watch is a computer, for crying out loud. Come on, man.
You can't save programs on this thing, buddy. Storage is a key component.
I can save a program on there, on a cartridge.
You can now. put it in, it'll be a big SD card or something. That'd be a funny storage method.
Here's my cartridge now. They also shrank them.
They did take out some of the switches and put in things like USB ports and whatnot up there.
It may be 22 times faster. It's also 22,000 times smaller.
Craig's got the new gaming cartridge. It's called an SD card. That's lovely. Featuring USB 3.0 and 2.0 eSATA, DisplayPort, DVI, and HDMI, the system is well stocked on the connectivity front. Finally, the signature of the Atari founder, Nolan Bushnell, acts as the cherry atop the faux wood grain toting package.
Hey, I think the winning thing is the little toggle switch for the on and off.
That's
those
right.
Are cool.
Those chrome, the brushed aluminum plastic chrome things.
Yeah, for the, what is it, Game Select or whatever, they're both USB ports.
See, I told you, they took out some switches and they put in USB or HDMI and whatnot. It's good stuff.
I'm going to share this real quick just so everybody can see
it. Whoa, the image got all stretchy. There you go.
I know, it does that.
It looks like from first glance, it looks like a 2600. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. Zoom in a little bit. You can see that USB goodness.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back with Remember When. there's some things you just don't want to remember about the comic book era. But we're going to remind you anyway right Yay. After this.
Geek Thoughts.
If you were to take two battery backup units and connect one to the other, would they constantly recharge each other forever?
This is not the set of numbers that you're looking for. 157, 163, 225, 151, 101.
What is that? Today's winning lotto numbers from Bruce Barr? Suddenly we've got Dr. Floyd's Imagination Nation Ranger secret message crossing over with Technorama. Does anybody know what's going on in this show anymore? Because I'm lost and it's our show.
That's the fun part.
The bass on this music. I'm sorry, I got caught up in that.
Yeah, wake up, Chuck.
This is the Remember When segment where we remember crazy things about the past in the Technorama style. And this time, do you remember back in 1979 when Superman had to disarm a bomb by disco dancing?
Why, yes, I don't.
It's true. In the grand scope of Superman adventures, all of them are drossy pap compared to the time Clark Kent saved his teenage fan club using the power of dance. It was truly the most important of Superman escapades. In 1979's Superman Family 196, stodgy Clark Kent is press ganged by the Clark Kent fan club. Yes, that was a real thing at one point. Into hanging out at a local dance club. Unfortunately, Clark and his crazy-eyed groupies are caught betwixt an explosive discotheque turf war. Our hero can't risk turning into Superman to zap the demolitions, or he will compromise his secret identity. Instead, he embarks upon a bomb-disarming disco routine, which is just as magnificent as it sounds. Scroll down. I like the top of the next page.
Oh, the top of the next page? Let me scroll down. This one right here?
Okay. Yeah, that one. That's what I was after. Go, Clark, yeah. Go!
I like how he's doing that little jumping thing in the middle there. It's stretching his legs in the beginning.
I saw enough of the dancing before to pick up the basics, he says. And by adding a few variations of my own, I can use the steps of this dance to set up a series of vibrations. It's got things in the background like, go Clark, go, shake your booty. Vibrations that will penetrate through the dance floor and shatter the time mechanism on the bomb, deactivating them.
Thanks, Clark.
Got to cover the entire surface of the dance floor. Knock out all the bombs that were planted. There, that's the last one.
By the way, at the bottom it says the unambiguous, relentless 1978 Superman disco theme. There's a YouTube video.
I like the comments myself. Well, you can tell by the way I wear my cape. I'm a crypto man, no time to gape. Music loud and women warm. I've been kicked around since I was born. But it's all right, that's okay. You may look the other way. We can't try to understand Yellow Sun's effect on man.
Sorry.
And that is hopefully the last time we sing on this show.
Yeah, that's pretty funny.
Someday they'll make fun of us. Remember when they sang on Technorama?
Yeah. We'll be on somebody else's show in the future. Remember when?
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here, in the media corner.
This one won't take too long. Over at SavageChickens.com, they have all of Chewbacca's dialogue from Star Wars.
Hey, for what it's worth, I do like the domain name by itself, the website.
SavageChickens.com?
Yeah.
Just go to SavageChickens.com/Chewbacca. And granted, it's a 12-inch by 12-inch, which is, what, about 30 centimeters or so, post-it note, and they've drawn every little dialogue on there. I know it's a little small on Craig's screen, but it's got, you know, in the first panel, and they've taken the time to draw the little backgrounds and things inside the TIE fighter or
the Millennium Falcon's cockpit.
Oh, yeah, that's. I'm sorry. You're right. When he runs into the little male robot.
Yeah. Oh, boy, that's funny.
Playing the 3D holographic chess game.
See, I thought it was going to be, they were going to translate it. See, that would have been fun.
No, then it wouldn't be fun.
It would be fun. I bet I could come up with some words for Chewbacca.
I want to print the whole thing out. And while we're on the Star Wars theme, this is the droid you are looking for. It's the R2-D2 keg pick. Somebody has taken an R2-D2 model and, stuck an extension cord in the back of them to keep the fridge cold, a bow tie on the front of them, and out comes cold beer.
What hey, we more need one of those at know? Dragon Con.
he's even got a little robotic arm holding out a tip jar.
Yeah. Good R2. I like his bow tie.
Well, they painted him a little gold, too, to be, if I remember right, was it Louisiana University? Somebody's colors. Although this could work equally well.
That's my high school's colors, man.
It could work at a Minnesota Vikings game, too.
Yeah. Maybe that's where he's at.
At a Vikings game?
Yeah. Poor R2. He lives in New England now.
What's up with this is, I'm wondering what Russian guy came up with this. Prolific Russian inventor Alexander Grigorievich Semenov imagines a world in which his countryman's number one weapon is number two. Semenov has patented a tank that allows the soldiers inside to dispose of their poop by firing it at their enemies.
Oh my God, this is genius!
According to his drawing. Now look at the drawing, man. There's the soldier sitting with his pants down, sitting on the little loo. And it turns into some kind of bullet. Semenov apparently believes that the Russian tank commanders rumble around with their drawers dropped, pooping as they go, providing plenty of ammo for the tank's crap cannon. All I can say is hope they got lots of Mexican food handy.
There you go. On number seven, number seven is actually number two.
But this is diagram one.
Wait a minute, how do they press it? I see. They got like a little mold that kind of...
I don't, you know, it's not even worth going. There are so many bad jokes here.
Yeah.
Well, but really?
This is all going to the crapper.
You can't write better stuff than this for Technorama. It was a good week, let's just say that.
So let me, you know, they shoot their enemy in... It's kind of... Wait. So this is like the
exactly.
This is like the war version of putting a flaming bag at somebody's door.
That I was also thinking of the good old trebuchet days where they'd fling dead animals and flaming poop over the castle walls.
Fling the dung.
Right. Not the more things change, the more they stay the same. Nothing beats a good old poop siege.
I was reading that about the theory that there's actually nothing new on the Earth, and I think that's true. We've seen it all.
Oh, boy. The chat room's having fun with that one.
Oh, yeah. Mighty Mer did have a hero that did something like that in Playing for Keeps.
In the Geek Library, we have a couple of interesting things for you that you might... Well, this one's not really go out to buy. there's, you've seen printer signs and whatnot, and mm-hmm. you ever get to the when in the old days when there was like one printer in the on the floor of your business or your company, and somebody's
PC
printing out a
letter,
printing out That's a good. Book, and all you need is a letter.
Yeah.
Well, they'd start putting up signs to say, you know, do not print large jobs between the hour of what and whatnot. Well, apparently there was an office with a printer like this that said, please do not print large jobs. So somebody went and printed out a D or an E-sized drawing of Steve Jobs, the cover of the autobiography book where he's got his thumb up to his chin, you know, that thoughtful look he's giving you.
I thought he was scratching his beard.
So somebody made a great play on words. Please do not print large jobs. Well, they printed up very large jobs. I thought that was worth it. That was pretty funny.
Ba-dum-tsh.
I want one of those. I can think of a couple of my former coworkers who are such Apple fanboys that they do this.
I wouldn't mind. I'd much rather have Jobs on my wall than Bill Gates.
This place.
Get that. Hey, we should print out that big long, a big version of that picture of Bill Gates sitting there on the desk with the floppy disk, you know? That semi-sexy looking version of it.
Oh, no, please,
you
no.
You know what I'm talking about?
No.
You know that picture, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Also in actually, the Geek Library.
Actually, you know what? Whoa.
Yeah.
They should do a picture like that with Linus Torvalds.
Who's less photogenic? Linus Torvalds or Bill Gates?
Probably...
Linus looked like he really had a hard time wearing that tux a few weeks ago, didn't he?
Yeah. What was that? I saw him in a semi-suit. He was doing a talk. That's the one where he flips off NVIDIA.
Last week we talked about Alan Turing Monopoly. Remember that?
Yes.
Well, now there is a 50th anniversary edition of Doctor Who Monopoly.
Ooh, stop. I'm in.
Yeah, I want.
Shut up and take my money.
You can buy this over at ForbiddenPlanet.com for just £26.99.
Oh, what does that compare?
I don't know, about $35, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
I'm headed over to London. I'll keep an eye out for it.
You should save some room in your luggage.
I'll save my pounds.
We should play. Hey, if you do, we'll play this next year at Dragon Con.
Recreate! Recreate! The Daleks start screaming out.
Do not Basco.
What do you mean? We still have to play the Martian Flux I won at the Parsec Awards.
Oh, yeah.
The card game.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. There were very few prizes this week, and I was one of the lucky winners.
And I do still have my Star Wars playing cards.
They want to play Doctor Who Monopoly in the hangout.
Do they? Well, actually, you probably could. You could do that.
I wanted to see the spaces on the board, but you really can't read them from these images.
Yeah, it's at a weird angle, isn't it?
What is it? Instead of go to jail, is it go? Well, there's still a go to jail. So the four corners are basically the same. I thought they'd have like Gallifrey and...
I think they're always pretty much the same, those corners.
I think so.
On any of the versions.
That looks
fun.
Yeah,
actually, you know what would be? That would be kind of cool if we got together, if you had something like this, we did a hangout, and maybe we drew a few names to get and invited those people to play.
And but what's that, video thing that Will Wheaton does?
You're right. Never
what's
mind.
It called? Not Let's Play a Game.
Oh, it's called Tabletop.
Tabletop. I was thinking Let's Get Bored. I
that's
remember
a good title,
that.
Too.
We'll call ours.
Hey, have you ever watched Tabletop?
Mm-mm.
You should check it out. Because
I should check
really
it out. There's
it.
A lot of stuff I'm missing out there on the YouTube channel.
It has really made me want to play some games, you know, no matter what it is. Even my son was into, what was that one? Crap. I couldn't, we even saw it in a store. I should have picked it up. But
that's
it was,
all right.
It was one of the games that he had on a show.
Yep.
And, yeah, even Harrison was interested in playing, so.
Cool. And finally, what is this week, Craig?
Yes, this week is Tolkien Week.
Of course, we're going to get this podcast released halfway through the week, so those of you who are listening live on the web stream, you got to jump on this. Get all your Chuck E. Cheese Tolkiens and play all the games you want, right?
Not those Tolkiens.
Oh.
Yeah, so this is Tolkien Week. I saw, I heard it or... saw it in passing somewhere on the internet. And so I looked it up. Of course, it's the same. It's the week that always contains September 22nd, which is Bilbo and Frodo's birthday. So I'm going to celebrate this week by reading The Hobbit.
Because, I'm going to celebrate by listening to Leonard Nimoy. Wow, you can hear a pin drop on that one. The Legend of Bilbo Baggins.
Oh, God.
Wow, Craig.
I'm sorry. My first thing. Well, I know you're a Fringe fan.
That's one of the biggest dead airs we've had on Technorama in years.
Well, my first thought was, he's into Fringe. What does that have to do with, you know?
No.
Anyway,
never mind.
I'm going to celebrate by reading The Hobbit this week. I'm going to reread it because, one, the movie's coming out, and I wanted to read it before. So I'm going to take this week and do it.
I just started a new Stephen King novel, so I'm probably going to be listening to that on my trip.
Well, I'll put this out there. I posted this on Facebook and on Google+, and it's not really a challenge type thing, but if you want to join me to read The Hobbit, that'd be awesome. So I can make a Google event. We can kind of keep all our chats in one place.
Actually, this would be a really good time to read The Hobbit right before the movie comes out, right?
Well, that was my point. Because, see, for each of the Lord of the Rings movies, let me back up. I had not read any of the Lord of the Rings before. Yep. When the movies came out,
then you read them.
I read one before each one. You know, I read it before each one. So when I saw the movie, I was like, wow, I really got into it because it was matching a lot of the imagery I had in my head, which is strange because nothing matches imagery I got in my head. But
well, so. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone was pretty spot on.
Yeah, well, you get the idea. Right. So I wanted to read The Hobbit a long time ago. However, I wanted to reread it before the movie, and I was kind of upset I didn't read The Lord of the Rings before, you know, so that's kind of why I did it. That makes sense?
No, yes, it does. Sense.
Okay. So if you ever want to join me, find my post on Google+ or Facebook and let me know, and we'll just kind of, I don't know what we're going to do. I'm just going to read it. So if you want to join
me, with that. Cool. Yeah. That brings us to the end of the show. We've had all the fun we can.
All right. See you later.
We appreciate your support. If you like the show, there are many ways to show your love. Call the listener line, 206-222-CHAT, 206-222-2428. Email us at technorama@chuckchat.com, and so on and so forth. And you'll find it all on the website at chuckchat.com. Go look there. Want to give a special thanks to Mad Marv for providing all the great blog content during the week. Everyone who sent us links during the week, thank you very much. We had so much stuff this week, it was hard to fit in the show. But we appreciate it. Keep sending it. You find weird, strange stuff, we'll eat it. We'll read it. We'll
what?
Spit it up and chew it out and then throw it on the show. And see what happens.
We're eating anything our listeners send us.
What? Lisa got a can of canned unicorn meat.
Really?
I actually got to see it, touch it, play
Did
with
it. Did you order it or?
No, her boyfriend gave it to her.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, good stuff.
Oh, he's a geek as well?
This show is a proud member of Friends in Tech. You can find out more at friendsintech.com. Also affiliated with all the great podcasts over at Farpoint Media. You'll want to check those out. There's a lot of good stuff over there. You know what? Until next time, tell a friend about Technorama. We appreciate that. And give me a binary high five.
101.
Woo! Woo! Settle down. Settle down. Take your meds and go to bed.